and I'm Dr. Lisa. Hello. I give a shit. Somebody's got to. I don't know this, like, Harvey thing, like, 24-7. I mean, it's, you know what? I want you guys to know this. This is the lesson from Harvey that I am personally taking away. And join me in it. And it's something that, as I get older, and I'm old, keeps coming up for me. It's called gratitude. That the real path to happiness is gratitude. And a lot of that has to do with the basic thing of health and safety. And if you have those things in your life to a reasonable degree, you are fortunate. And, a lot of things suck, and they suck for everybody in some way or another. So, you know what I really am mad about? I'm really mad about people complaining about, like, things having to do with, like, their kids, like how, people in, okay, I'm just going to be awful. People in Manhattan complain about, like, they don't have enough money to send their kids to, like, camp and private school, or how expensive it is and shit like that. Like, stay home, take your kids to a park, and shut the fuck up. All right, I feel better. Thanks. I did my own therapy today. Thanks for listening to the show. Dr. Lisa gives a shit. I'm a self-proclaimed psychotherapist. I have 15 more years of experience. And I have this lovely, lovely young lady on today, Courtney Francis Fallon. I was worried I was going to screw it up, so I screwed it up. And she's an incredible force of creativity. And so the thing about her that I'm curious to find out is she has so many projects and so much energy. And she also seems to me, I don't know her super well. I haven't spent a lot of time with her. I know her work pretty well. She was in a great show by Savannah Spirit called Take Your Hands Off My Country, C-U-N-T-R-Y. But she's just just a fount of creativity and energy. And she also seems like very meticulous and stuff like that, and maybe obsessive. So I want to find out, like, what is making this young lady tick, and whether we can, you know, just make sure that she's doing everything she needs to do to make her life happy and send her along her way. That's all. Maybe we'll all learn something there. I'm sure we will. And I'm going to move. Before we get started, I'm going to put in a big plug for her project that she is focused on now, which is huge. It's called Draw the Blue Line, and it's from September 12th to 25th. And it's about the Paris Accord Agreement. And it's on my Facebook page and her website and stuff. You can find out more about it, and she'll explain a little bit. But it's basically the idea to create awareness of how Trump is fucking with us in this particular Paris Accord way by drawing a blue line throughout, outdoors, through everything, you know. She's looking for all sorts of artists, street artists, anybody. And it's a great project. And so I want you to know about that. What's the website, Courtney?
DrawTheBlueLine.com.
DrawTheBlueLine.com.
It's on Twitter and Instagram and Tumblr and everything you can think of.
So we talked about that. And then I want to also tell you about that. I just want to let you know that, I was listening to the podcast of a show that we did about the importance of independent radio in this critical time and how important it is. And you know, when I listen to it, I'm inspired by how valuable Radio Free Brooklyn is, and not just because of wacky, irreverent shows like mine or all the great music or all the great talk and comedy and all that other stuff, but there's really a lot of important political talk shows on our station that are really getting the word out there. And so I encourage you to go to our website and donate some money, radiofreebrooklyn.org. And if you have an interest in calling in today for any reason at all, just to say hello, you're more than welcome to. Call us at 718-928-9732. Kids, that's 718-928-9732. Maybe we'll give out a vagina card later or something if you call in, because Courtney makes these really great cards that are let me just put it to you this way. It's a photograph of a cigarette in her vagina, but it's painted, so it's really hard to tell that it's a vagina. It's not actual lips. Okay, there you go. Picture that. And now meet Courtney. Hi, Courtney.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
You have a lovely radio voice.
Ooh.
You sound really good. So, Courtney, your work is so extensive. You do performance. Okay, why don't you tell... Okay, so your background... I read about your background, and you originally thought that you really wanted to be a writer.
Like, only writing was the first... is the art that, like, I connected with the most deeply at first.
As a child, right?
Yeah. And then when I was in high school, my mom brought home a big bag of books from a used book sale, and Catcher in the Rye was in there. And I was 14, and I was like, I have no idea what this book is about. I've heard about it forever. I'm going to read it. And then found it deeply affecting.
Wow.
And then I was like, you know, I'm going to read Our Town. Like, all these classics, Slaughterhouse 5, they're classics for a reason. And started to just get really excited about things. And also, started to realize that what was considered classic literature had a lot of dirty adult themes.
Oh, yeah. There's fucking in there for sure.
My favorite line from my favorite line from Slaughterhouse 5 is, Billy had a tremendous wing. That's the funny thing about cocks. You never know who'll get one. And I was like, I am getting a good grade for reading this right now. Go Vonnegut. Yes.
So anyway, yeah. But anyway, you've exploded into performance. And what other areas? Well, photography.
So it's...
Can you just like list them?
So,
because we only have an hour here.
We only have an hour. Basically, I've done some visual art. My writing projects will inspire other projects. So, and then right now I am about to do Draw the Blue Line. I'm calling a public art protest. And mm-hmm. It's really surprised me too. But when you get that inspiration for an idea for a project, you take it and run with it.
So what else? You've done
and then performance art is like the next frontier that I'm getting into. Mm-hmm. But I wrote for myself as a performer. I want to get into directing also for like ensemble scripts.
And you do you sing or something?
I do sing. If anyone will have me, I'm like totally down to join.
Why don't you sing a few bars? What's your favorite? Can you do that? What's your favorite song? Or what song do you sing when somebody says sit?
I do Amy Winehouse, Valerie.
Let's hear
come
let's,
on over. Stop making a fool out of me. Why don't you come on over, Valerie? Valerie, Valerie.
See, what did I tell you, folks? So your talents are really broad and vast. So what the fuck would you do? What, you know, how are you supposed to make all that satisfying? But I'm also, another thing about you is that I am struck by your vibrancy, but also your enthusiasm and your, I think, like, generosity of, like, outreach and, you know, being on top, like, just being on the ball about everything. Like, you seem like you're almost worried about, like, I'm wondering if there's some kind of anxiety about whether you're going to live up to what you want to live up to or what you expect other people living up to. Did I get too deep into it right away? I felt comfortable with you, so I went there.
I like it. I like that you feel comfortable. As far as, I just like other people who show up and who are really there when they show up. And so I am incapable almost of like not giving my all.
Ooh. So, and were you like an A student?
terrible behavior in school. I wasn't a good student until college. In high school, Why? It is still embarrassing when I run into my former teachers in my hometown because they still hate me.
Why? What did you do?
I was just a motor mouth and literally like a wild animal, no self-control in the classroom. When I was a junior in high school, my history teacher called home and was like, yeah, Courtney talks a lot. My mom was like, yeah, she's going to do that. Like they had given up by that point.
Oh, yeah. You should have a radio show any guests.
Yeah, that would be probably how I would do it.
I don't know whether I would. Well, that doesn't even matter. So let's find out what the nature nurture version of you. Let's find out. So, where did you grow up? How old are you now? You're
33. Yeah.
A very good looking 33, folks.
Oh.
Very, very good looking.
You're just doing my
You're
heart
single
good.
Now though, right? You were saying that.
I haven't been in the same room as a man since March. August 31st.
You mean naked?
Yeah.
Been in the same.
That's my favorite euphemism for sex right now.
You haven't been naked in a room with a man since when?
March.
That's hard to understand, but was that a one-night stand or a dating thing?
It was a out of town. It was this guy.
Was it hot?
It was super hot. I had cried in his mouth making out with him in February 2015. So this was a redo. I was like brokenhearted and I met him. It was a friend of a friend. I was out of town.
Crying in somebody's mouth. I think we need a diagram of that. Can you do that? Yes, you can.
It's this.
Can you write a whole book on that by the time the show's done? You bet you can. All right. So where did you grow up?
I'm from West Seneca, New York. It's a suburb of Buffalo.
Mm-hmm. And what did your parents do?
My father was a police officer, a detective. Mm-hmm. And my mother was a cancer research nurse.
Oh, wow. And do you brothers or sisters?
I'm the youngest of four. I have two older brothers and an older sister, and we were all born within 6 years.
Really?
Yeah, madness.
Are you close with them now?
My sister and I are close. My brothers are estranged from the family.
Wah, now, wah. Why is that? Good sound effect, though. Why is that?
Different stuff. Really very different things.
Okay,
really
so
quite
here,
a surprise.
There's something. Yeah, something happened there.
Yeah. Oh, a lot happened.
Can I ask you about it?
You'd rather not
because it's your family.
I am confident that one of my brothers would sue me if I spoke about him in an interview.
Just
confident.
Then we don't
want to
do that.
Not that he's like lawsuit happy in any other aspect
of
his life.
Okay, well, we don't need to know. Is there...
one is about money and then others about just general family drama.
Okay, can we put it in a context that involves you that we don't have to talk about them? Like, could you say what years it was or what your point is? You know, where you were in life, so we can have like just to have a broad view of how it might have had effect on you. Like, was it an ongoing situation? Can we talk about it in really broad terms? Or maybe not.
I'm trying to articulate.
Well, we can come back. What, you want me to give you a second or do you want to come back?
Basically, like my parents' marriage was very tumultuous. And the last time I saw my mother, she set our house on fire with our baby clothes my senior year of high school.
The last time you saw your mother?
Was 2001. And then she died in 2005.
And she set your house
on fire with our baby clothes 4 days before Christmas because we didn't want to live with her after our parents were about to start their long overdue divorce.
Oh my God. I'm so sorry to hear
that.
What was, wow, tell me, that was 2001?
Yeah.
And how old
December
were you
December 21st,
then?
17.
How old? 17. So can you tell us like the circumstances behind that or?
She just, she was an unhappy person and.
Did she have serious mental problems? Because that's. I mean,
She had a very difficult childhood. She was born in communist Poland and emigrated to the United States when she was 9. And so being a mother was not necessarily
Did
a good
she come
thing.
With her family?
She was sent ahead with her two older brothers to be adopted by a distant cousin of my already dead grandmother. And my grandfather had already remarried. So this is like... doing what you can't to get your kids out of Poland communism.
Right.
So,
right.
So it just, it was rough. So, I think she's a damaged person.
Yeah, obviously. I mean, not obviously, but you know, we
probably
have compassion.
Yeah.
Well, that's, you know, the thing is, it's confusing, I think, sometimes when we feel that kind of compassion, because I'm told, you know, you can't help but feel for her, but at the same time, there's no way that wasn't a damaging parent for you. And, you know, I'm sure, like, emotionally, it's kind of, I would have guessed that there's a lot of balance between being, you know, angry and horrified and being just loving and forgiving. And that's...
It took a long time, so, especially because she died unexpectedly. And so I didn't
Can
speak to
her.
Can you
say what happened there?
She fell down in an unfortunate position, and it was kind of a freak accident.
You don't think she had anything to do with it?
Super confident.
Was she?
Because that was like a question for a while, so I had to play Nancy Drew to like confirm it.
Okay,
the insurance company ruled that it was an accident, and then some people in the family think she did commit suicide, but I'm pretty confident
she didn't.
Was she stable?
What kind of mental state was she in when that happened?
I don't know, because I hadn't seen her. But she was functioning. She was a highly functioning person.
And so you were only
21.
Yeah. So where were you in your life? Did you go to college?
I did. I went to Binghamton University. Go Bearcats.
the Bearcats. Bearcats.
Go Bearcats. They're like Badgers.
Oh, you don't have to take out your pom-poms. They don't need that.
I genuinely loved it there.
That's great. So yeah, you must have been happy to get to college, boy.
Oh yeah.
So that must have been really devastating when your mother died.
Yeah.
Very suddenly.
It was actually such a shock that it took time to feel.
Right.
And then and it took a long time to process. I moved to Poland to learn Polish and spent 2 years there and met like all this family no one had spoken to in 50 years and had all these beautiful, amazing experiences. I live in Greenpoint to hear, speak, and read Polish.
Oh, really?
So like while she's absent from my life, I haven't had a mother since I was 17. There's also like this love and connection with Poland, and they feel very different, but at the same time, like they couldn't be any more connected. So it's really,
you have to meet the woman I had on last week, Michelle Levy, because she's doing a project about her family being from Poland and her grandmother and visiting Poland and all that.
It's an amazing place. I love Poland. Like I have this amazing connection now with this Polish family that I'm the only one who knows in America. And
did you meet them in Greenpoint?
No, I met them like in Poland.
And they're in Poland now?
Yeah, like
you go to Poland and stay with your family.
I moved to Poland and after a year in Krakow, I wrote this letter that was like, hi, I'm your cousin and I live in Krakow and I'm from America and do you want to hang out? And they were like, move in with us. Oh my God.
And you've stayed with them?
And I've
lived with them for 2 years?
I lived in Krakow on my own. I had my own apartment. I was teaching English, but I went and visited them. I left Poland. I lived in Poland September 2011 till July 2013.
Can you sing Valerie in Polish?
Chodź tutaj, Valerie. That's like, come here.
That sounds good. I like it. Beautiful Chodź voice. Tutaj.
My favorite, the only song I know in Polish is A teraz idziemy na jednego, a teraz idziemy wodka pić, cha-cha-cha, which is, and now we're going for a minute. And now we're gonna have some vodka, cha cha cha, which they sing at weddings. Bands sing that at weddings before they take a break.
Did you ever sing professionally or anything?
I was a backup singer on a tour with the folk singer Mike Yes Yes Ersing. It was Yes Yes in Heaven Tongue, and it was an absolute pleasure. I love singing. And,
yeah, that must have been fun.
And then I did a cross-country road trip, and we would meet people in bars and convince them to let us sleep in their house. That was with the photographer, Catherine T. Jacobs. And karaoke was the best way to meet people to find a place to sleep. So we actually started to seek out karaoke bars and I would sing, and we would meet people, and then we would sleep on their houses. It was amazing.
I like that.
It was amazing.
A road trip based on karaoke.
Well, it was based on photography, and the karaoke was just a bonus.
I think that could be like, I think that there's a tour tour, you know, tour planning service in your future too.
Travel
through karaoke. Travel America, see America through karaoke.
And Canada, we had great luck in the Yukon with karaoke. We ended up partying with those people who we met in a karaoke bar for like 2 days.
That's
amazing.
So fun.
Canada Day.
So what was your growing up like before all this happened? Like what was, so you guys were all pretty close in age. Is your sister the oldest? Your oldest sister?
I'm the youngest. So my sister's a year and a half older than me. And then
the two boys are older.
The two boys are the oldest. And
so what was the atmosphere like? Your parents didn't get along or?
It was, you know, it's.
Was it stable and normal or was it?
Yes and no. So like when you had. It depended on what was going on with mom, basically. And then 4 kids in 6 years working really hard. And they made so many sacrifices for us. Like my mom went back to school when I was in kindergarten to get her nursing degree. And my dad was working a ton. I talked to him recently about it. And I was like, how were those years? Like I see families with kids like that. Like what? And he's like, I don't really remember much. but for the most part, I grew up on this street that is just like heavenly. And there were a bazillion kids. And I was permanently outside and climbing trees and playing outside.
So you're very physically active?
Very, very physically active. And so...
Were you athletic, good at sports?
I did become very athletic.
So were you? Did you excel at sports?
Yeah.
See, so that's... explains, I think, why you have so much physical energy, because you developed that side of yourself. I mean, you know, people who are athletic have a lot more physical energy, and it also keeps you from being depressed.
Do you get depressed? I was having a little adjustment. I moved to New York in September, so this is my freshman year in New York, as I like to say, and I was experiencing this level of stress that I hadn't anticipated and realized that I can exercise it out.
Yeah, so that's why you're so fucking happy. It's the fucking it's the athlete.
Certainly helps, but it's just like a weird disposition.
What were you good at, say?
So I didn't get really decent at sports until I was about 15 or 16, but I played soccer. I played lacrosse. I was a cheerleader.
Did you excel at all those sports?
I was good enough. So
you were on the team.
I was on the team and I got playing time, but I was not the best.
But you enjoyed it? Did you
loved it? Yeah. Like
did you have friends that way?
Yeah.
Was that your social life? I mean,
it definitely was in high school. And I did, I started doing sports. I played a little bit when I was a little girl. We signed up for softball and stuff. I didn't care for it. And then I started doing sports for the totally wrong reasons in eighth grade because popular kids did it. And I was like a relentless social climber in like eighth, ninth grade. And then by the time I got decent at sports, I didn't really care about the fact that it was cool or whatever. I genuinely just like began to love the sports for what they were.
Right. So
Title IX is one of the best things that ever happened to me, and I'm very fiercely protective of it.
Really great.
Very protective of it.
So you were interested in, I find that, so you were interested in being popular?
Oh, it was so important to me.
What do you think that comes from?
I just wanted to be Kelly Kapowski from Saved by the Bell.
You just, do you think it had anything to do with like the way things were at home, or were you worried about being liked, or what was going on at home? Was there a lot of arguing? I picture a lot of arguing.
No, it was just more.
Was it?
Things would just be wrong. You would just know that like you didn't want to be around.
So there was a lot of unspoken stuff.
Yeah. Things would be tense.
But like dirty looks or tones of voices kind of things.
There was, sometimes my mom would be on the warpath was the term, and you just didn't want to cross her.
She was moody.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then.
Did your parents appear to get along okay?
The first few, there were in 2001, it was like, you guys got to get divorced. I was talking to my dad about it. And I was like, this is not sustainable. But prior to that, there had been a talk of divorce in 1999 and in 1996. And 96 and 99, that came as a surprise.
Mm-hmm. Oh, so when it finally happened.
So but it wasn't like an entirely, it wasn't an entirely toxic environment.
Were you so was the feeling at home okay? Or
it was generally okay, but then there were times where things weren't right. And you knew they weren't right.
Did it feel unstable because you didn't know? Like you didn't know what to expect when you got home?
No, it wasn't omnipresent, is that the term? It wasn't consistent. So when it would happen, when things were rough, it was kind of a surprise.
Oh.
And what saved me, I like love the street I grew up on so much. I was never home, and I, as youngest of four, my older siblings like tortured me.
What do you mean?
Just like regular sibling BS. Yeah. Like totally made fun of me. And, when I was really little, I was a teeny tiny peanut. So they would put a laundry basket over me and some heavy books, and I like couldn't get out.
Love it.
My oldest brother would like swing me around by my feet, which was sometimes fun. And then other times I was worried I was going to hit my head.
Right.
And stuff like that. I never had control of the TV. Like little things that, you know, aren't cool for you when you're in third grade. So there were tons of kids to play with, and I didn't want to be in the house because I didn't want to incur the wrath of my siblings more than like the concern about my parents.
Do you think that, so now I'm putting this together, now I'm making this assumption. So do you think that maybe you wanted, like part of wanting to be popular was because you felt like you didn't have that kind of control?
I just love parties. I'm just really social, and I just really wanted to like go to parties.
You just like being around people.
I just really like just being like around people. And I like people. And that's why it didn't, you know, I got over a lot of the high school nonsense before high school was over.
So it wasn't a status thing. It was more you just really wanted to, you enjoy people.
I'm sure I would have loved to be homecoming queen though, too. I'll be honest.
That's so ridiculous.
I'll be honest with you.
I think you're the only person I've ever met that
wanted to be homecoming.
Yeah, I don't really know a lot of people. I've heard some really
I didn't campaign for
I've heard some crazy aspirations.
I didn't campaign for it. But no, but, and then, yeah, just, and having stuff to do and having people to hang out with
but
was more.
Is it the, like, what I'm trying to figure out is whether you want the positive feedback or you just are, like, you know, just gregarious.
It's gregarious.
Okay.
Because in eighth grade, I had this realization that like people aren't going to like you no matter what you do. So you may as well enjoy yourself while they don't like you and that's, just be yourself.
That's really good. I'm going to try and learn that now.
It's, yeah.
Did you, what was I going to say? So it sounds like, you know, it sounds like an okay childhood.
It was.
You didn't do well in school. What was that?
I was just like, I was a mediocre student.
Why do you think that was?
Because I was like a wild animal and I just like genuinely couldn't behave to save my life. I was always in trouble.
But
my grades were fine in the humanities. I didn't excel in Spanish or math.
Mm-hmm.
But now I speak Spanish.
So it was,
came around.
Teaching is, or the way, it's not the teachers. It's the teachers.
Well, it didn't help. No. And it was a terrible textbook. I stand by that.
Yeah. Well, it's so abstract to learn language in school. What am I trying to say? What I'm thinking about is, but how did your parents, you were a discipline problem.
Yeah.
So how did your parents how was that handled at home?
I feel like we all were discipline problems, except for like my oldest brother, my other brother and my sister and I were pretty
much.
So
you didn't get a lot of criticism from your parents? Did you get encouragement from them?
Yeah. And like, I also, on top of sports, I also played violin. And so they were really encouraging. If I was like, as a teenager, if I, you know, said, "Daddy, I want a new pair of jeans," he'd be like, "Okay, well, you have a job, so go buy one yourself." But if I was like, "Hey, my cleats are kind of, I might need new cleats soon. And he'd be like, okay, do you want to go to the mall right now? Like, it was so, you know, so.
That's really great.
Yeah.
That's really great.
Yeah. And like, yeah. My dad especially would go to all my soccer games and stuff. I was super into soccer when I was 16.
You know, sports really, like, really, really made a big difference for you, I think.
I definitely learned, I mean it, Title IX, best thing that ever happened to me. I learned the value of hard work. That was like I said, I started doing sports in middle school because that was like what the pretty people were doing. And I wasn't very good. I didn't have a lot of endurance. And then I got into it. And that was the first thing where I really applied myself. And like, I would run all the time. I would get home from practice and I would go for an extra run and work out my teen angst. If I had a bad day when I was in ninth grade, I would like go for a run and have a cry.
Yeah, that's like, I work out my teen angst now, going for a long walk. Exactly.
Love walking.
Shout out to Let's Exercise, you dorks. Get out of the house. You creative people think you don't need to do it. Do anything.
Just good for your brain.
Get some fresh air.
Good for your brain.
I want to, I think it's time to tell people how great Radio Free Brooklyn is.
I would love to hear more about that.
Yeah, they are. They're really, it's like the greatest station. We were just, go to radiofreebrooklyn.org, check us out. Check us out, Dr. Lisa Gives a Shit. If you ever want to write to me, I'm Dr. Lisa at radiofreebrooklyn.org. Send me a note. Okay, so you're listening to Courtney
Francis Fallon.
Courtney Francis Fallon on Dr. Lisa Gives a Shit. We're talking about how diverse her creative drive is and where it comes from. So, okay. But, so do you have, a job? You have so many creative activities. Do you have a job as well?
So I manage an Airbnb.
Wow.
And I'm
really?
A freelance personal assistant.
Oh, wow. So you kind of have some freedom to sort of make your own living and make things work for you?
Right now, everything is pretty much every minute that I have is devoted to draw the blue line between now and September 25th. And then after that, I gotta get on that. I gotta hustle some dough.
Right. Oh, and I also wanted to ask you, let's just go back a second. Did you have a boyfriend in high school?
Yes. Senior year.
Senior year. Have you ever lived with a guy or had a serious? How long?
I lived with a boyfriend the summer between my junior and senior year of college because we were long distance.
Mm-hmm.
So we met in Israel, and he lived in North Bergen, New Jersey, and I was studying in Binghamton. So I spent the summer in North Bergen, New Jersey.
Oh, nice.
And then 2010, I lived with a man in Buffalo who I was romantically.
And when was your last relationship?
It's been a while. Ended January 2015.
Really? So what do you think that is?
Well,
I don't get it, but
I like that. That's really cool. I was transient for a long time. So I devoted myself to traveling for the 10 years after I graduated from college. Mm-hmm. And so if I was living somewhere, it would be like, okay, I'm here now, but I'm going to leave the country in 7 months.
Mm-hmm.
And so it wasn't really conducive to dating. And mm-hmm. so,
I went
to Africa. So yeah, like
where
we broke
in
up.
Africa?
I went to spent 83 days there, and I started in Johannesburg and then popped up to Botswana.
Wow.
Was convinced I should go to Zimbabwe. I wasn't planning on it. And the people I met were like, you're an idiot if you don't go to Victoria Falls. So I did, and they were correct. It was amazing. And
were
then
you
I went
by yourself?
Yes.
Wow. Was that scary at all?
Yeah, all the time. Oh my God. Yeah.
Really? Like what?
I have this fear of getting robbed by a taxi driver when I'm going from one city to another, because I was traveling with a computer and my passport my camera. So I don't think it's a super common occurrence, but you're pretty vulnerable. And generally, I take public transportation, especially when I'm abroad, I'm trying to save money, and here too. But when I have all my stuff and I'm in Africa and I don't know what I'm doing, I'll take a taxi from the bus station to wherever I'm going.
Sure,
and I have this fear of getting robbed by a taxi driver. And
were people respectful of you?
I didn't last 20 minutes. I got my ATM card was out of my possession in the airport.
Wow.
Literally didn't last 20 minutes.
Wow.
In Johannesburg.
But
recovered by, and had a great trip.
Yeah, but and, you were by yourself. Did like men try to like attack you? Like I imagine you get out of
It's really trip. Hard to get out of Cape Town with somebody without somebody pulling a knife on you.
Did but, that happen to you?
But it was so weird. I was with a large group of people and I was at a theater conference and I was with two women and a man and we were late for a play. So one of the women and I were walking very quickly and a man came up to ask us for money, you know, as a beggar situation, panhandler dude. And I was like, sorry, dude, like late for a play. And I just like sped walk past him, totally oblivious. And then I realized that the woman who was walking next to me, the man and the other people, the man and the woman were about, you know, 5 feet behind us. I realized that she's not with me and I turn around and she was South African. So she knew how to comport herself. I wouldn't have, but she just like bopped into the street and the couple didn't know what was going on, but he was putting like an enormous knife back in his back pocket. Mm-hmm. So he basically, I walked past him and I guess as soon as I got past him, he must've pulled out the knife and tried to mug her. And it was, there were a few other like things that weren't the coolest, but I think it's called Long Street. I can't remember in Cape Town. Mm-hmm. Everybody has some sort of story about having somebody pull a knife on them. And
scary.
I didn't like it. I didn't care for it.
Let's go back to, cause I want to make sure that we talk about your creative work and, in a bigger picture, but I also want to just go back to, what we talked about earlier, which was that, really difficult time in your life with your family and what happened with your mother and all that. So how do you process that, or how do you think that affects you today? I know you said you were in therapy. Some great therapy stories.
Yeah.
We're not going to have time for them today.
Yeah,
I don't think we'll have to come back.
But after my mom set the house on fire, it was actually this really great thing because it was like, because she didn't burn the house down. So that was great.
Why do you think she set it on fire?
She was punishing us because we didn't want to live with her.
Mm. So it was just, that seems super crazy. Does it seem super crazy for her to do that? Or does that seem, was she pretty out there and that was just in one?
I knew she was going to set the house on fire. It was such a crazy day. Like, I didn't know that she was going to set the house on fire. But she wasn't supposed to be at the house. I got home from school and she wasn't supposed to be at the house. Things had really come to a head. So she was staying with some friends. And
head between her and your brothers?
Between
your father?
My father. She had like stolen something from him and like tried to press charges on him for like some nonsense. So she was going to stay with some friends. And so she wasn't supposed to be at the house. And also I got home before 3:00. She normally worked until 6 p.m. So she wasn't supposed to be there at all. And I came home and the house was full of cigarette smoke and she hadn't smoked in the house in years.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was like, oh, this is bad. So I went upstairs and I called my boyfriend at the time.
Okay, I'm going to interrupt you because we're short on time and I want to get to the emotion.
Basically, yeah. So I knew she was going to set the house on fire.
But how did that affect you? That's not a simple, I'm asking it like it's a simple question.
I know.
At the same time, You're an incredibly positive, productive person. How did you manage that?
It was really freeing because it was like, okay, this is what we are. This is what's going on in the family. Like everyone had kind of been protecting each other from the worst of her. And so once that happened, it was kind of like
a relief.
It was a huge relief. And we were ridiculous about it. It was the playroom is the extra room. And that was where she set the house on fire. So we were like the playroom roasting on an open fire.
I love it. Oh,
and
that's funny.
Like it. So it was actually quite cathartic.
Right. Oh, that's so good.
Yeah. And then also disturbing because you're like, what are you doing, lady?
No, that's really upsetting. Okay. And was the house ruined and stuff like that?
No, it was great. It was only some minor. Yeah, it was pretty good. Okay. Yeah, she didn't burn the house down at all. There was no structural damage. Oh, and there was concern that the insurance wouldn't pay out because she was on the policy, but they did. So that was great.
So it was,
it was a best case scenario for your house being started on fire by your mom. Oh, swear to God.
No, I'm glad to hear that.
Yeah, totally.
So let's talk about your creative work. So you have so many different avenues that you're going in, and I'm wondering if there's what's the commonality between them?
I feel like everything involves writing. I don't even feel that way. Everything involves writing. If you, no matter what you're doing, when you make a photography series, you're going to end up writing about it. You're going to explain it, your artist statements and the conversations that you have. So language is present in everything.
So does it start with the writing, or does it start with the art and then the writing, or?
It starts with the writing and then the art kind of pops out of it. Draw the Blue Line is unique. It really came out of nowhere, to me. But.
So that's really something. Why don't you explain the project, if you can, in a couple of, it's a complex project.
So the idea is I want to cover New York City and the digital universe with blue lines to represent the rising sea levels during the UN General Assembly. It's a call and response. And the idea is that I want it to reach members of the UN so that they can see the citizens' commitment and support for the Paris Agreement. And then once it's on their radar, the hope is that they will reply in kind by adding a blue line to the permanent mission of the UN or their social media or a press release or something to reaffirm their commitment and reassert their commitment to the Paris Agreement.
No, it's an really interesting project. What is your...
Ambitious.
It's a huge undertaking.
It's very ambitious.
Very ambitious. But at the end of the day, you are trying to create awareness for the Paris Accord, or?
So what it really comes down to is I was really inspired by the city of Pittsburgh. Trump said I was elected to represent the people of Pittsburgh, not the people of Paris. And Pittsburgh was like, well, since you asked, we're just going to take on some even more stringent climate change measures. And so the United States probably is not quite out of the Paris Agreement yet, but I'm concerned about the domino effect it could potentially have for emerging economies and other places.
Right.
With anything... the UN is pretty toothless. And so the concern that they wouldn't necessarily, these people who have signed on, the signatories to the Paris Agreement may not actually really do what they promise they will.
So talk
about that with them.
And so you're hoping that this will create awareness and that...
And I'm hoping that they will publicly...
Get more involved.
And I'm hoping that signatories of the Paris Agreement, which is the entire planet except for Syria and Nicaragua.
And us.
Well, we signed. We just might leave it. Will state again that they stand by what they have
and how
signed
on
to.
And how are you getting people to... You want them to draw a blue line.
So you can put a blue line on... the facade of buildings, the inside of buildings, on windows, on cash registers, on your social media.
And just how are you getting the word out?
So I'm starting here.
Well, right here.
And then,
you hear this, folks? You got to get
come on down.
This.
Draw the blue line.
We have a job for you.
Draw the blue line. Hashtag draw the blue line. And then, I'm just going to be contacting artists. I'm really, really trying to recruit projection artists. I want to do some wacky projections.
So you're really it's sort of a curating and a sort
it's
of
play. So it's a public art. So like that's where it's also I want to see how other people are going to do this. Mm-hmm. So I am encouraging people to like take it and run with it.
So do you feel so it seems like you're definitely excited about the project. I mean, so maybe the work that you do does have more of a thread than I might have thought? Or are you satisfied with the work you're doing? Or do you have an end goal for it? Or does it seem as disparate to you as it does to me?
So, no, that's like the thing I've been saying lately. I was like, I thought I was going to write novels, and now this is what's happening. So,
So you're just really instincts and just really open to new things all the time.
Yeah, and everything.
And what happens?
I find there's
so
much overlap, and like they inspire each other.
So this is me projecting. Like, if the scary thing about it is that the things don't go the way that you hope. Like, let's say, enough people. I didn't want to talk about this because it's such a great idea, but I mean, like,
it could flop.
And how are you with those things?
So it was, I am intellectually comfortable with failure,
and
because geniuses fail.
I want to tell people the reason I'm asking this is because this Courtney person puts herself fucking out there, and the idea of flop is we're all afraid of flopping, but Courtney is pretty fucking brave, and I'm wondering how immune you are.
So, yeah, like, I have to keep telling myself, like, geniuses fail. People who I respect and who are geniuses have projects that fail. And because of what I'm trying to do, which is have a conversation with the United Nations and recruit New York City and the rest of the planet to help me for that, that's huge. So I have to be comfortable with failing at it because it is so ambitious and huge. And then I also intend to repeat this project in different ways until the United States reaffirms its commitment to the Paris Agreement. So this year may be a little slow, and then next year might be ridiculous, but then we'll see how it goes. So, but you know, it's hard because I could do everything that I see that I could do for this project 24/7 nonstop and still not do everything that I see that I can do for this project.
Right.
And so,
fucking mature attitude, I'll tell you that much.
Thanks.
Jesus. And what I was going to point out also as part of the journey, I mean, process, I'm all about the process. And you're here now, we're doing this as part of that, right? So the process is pretty cool.
Yeah, and I'm a new kid in town. I imagine
when
that this will be really... September 17th.
Like almost
last
year.
Yeah, it's about to happen.
Why did you move here?
For my career. It was New York or LA.
You mean being an artist?
Yeah. And it was New York or LA primarily for writing.
Mm-hmm.
This is, Droblands really surprised me, really.
And what?
And like, I didn't see myself doing anything like this. Mm-hmm. I hadn't foreseen this, but I devoted myself to traveling. And then once I kind of felt not ready, you're never done traveling, but.
You picked this place.
I want to set down roots.
What did you think about LA?
I am so stressed out when I am west of the Rockies.
How come?
Everyone is so laid back that it turns me, like, you think I'm showing, I'm pretty type A. I didn't even really know that
until
recently.
No, you're not kind of type A.
You're like way type A. Totally. And then not in other ways. It's really strange. But when I'm out west, I feel like I have to chase people and everyone's such a space cadet that it makes me super uptight.
Whereas LA is a little like that?
I think so. I don't have a ton of experience with LA. I lived in Portland for a minute and I went through legit culture shock. This is pre-Portlandia.
Mm-hmm. No, I used to think that, but I haven't been out there in a while, you know. But LA always seems, well, any place compared to New York seems laid back to me. So let's talk about your dating life. Should we do that?
Sure can if you want.
Okay. So
there's nothing.
So you've been here a year.
Yeah.
Do you care about having a partner?
I would love that. Yeah, I want a partner. I want to take over the planet, and I want a partner to help me with that. Mm. I'd also like to camp.
I'm going
to go camping with. Yeah,
that's great. So have you been on any dates, or have you met any guys, or what do you think's going on here?
It's a bunch of strange, weird things.
You can still call in. This woman's gorgeous. Blue eyes, athletic, 718-928-9732. You should don't miss your chance. It's like an amazing single woman who can sing. She could sing in your ear.
I can cook too.
And she can cook, and she's great at sports. Come on. You like watching sports?
I watching sports makes me sad that I'm not playing them.
Oh, okay. Well,
but,
then
you know,
sports guys, She needs a creative guy. Anyway, so what's going on there? So have you been on dates, dating? Have you been on
dates? It's been not good. Yeah, I went on like a bunch of funny, random first dates with random men I met when I first got here. So that was kind of fun.
Met in person?
Yeah, like I smiled at a guy near City Hall, and I walked about, you know, 15 feet away, and we had made eye contact and smiled. And then he came up to me and was like, "I'm sorry, do I know you? Because you smiled at me." And it was so nice.
Jesus.
And he was like, "Can I take you out for a coffee?" And I was like, "Sure." And we had like a funny little encounter, mm-hmm. and it was really nice. So I had little things like that, but then he didn't call me. And he had major drama with his ex-wife, so I didn't call
him.
Oh,
that's not good. So yeah.
I'm failing to seduce and I'm failing to be seduced. It's working both ways. Like I'm trying, I introduce myself to men. I can't front.
Yeah, you're an outgoing
person.
Yeah,
and I can't front. Like if I think you're dreamy, yeah. I'll like say hi.
Yeah.
And then, but they're not, no one's biting when I'm throwing out the lines. And then the men who have been approaching me have been like tactless and.
You mean they're like, "Hey, I'd like to hump you."
Like a neighbor of mine texted me, like I just moved apartments and like a new neighbor just like texted me at like 11:30 on Friday night. And I was like, "You're just trying to put the P in the V." And you don't do that with your neighbor. Don't shit where you sleep. So
I hope you taught him something.
I was a little more tactful about it. But
so do you have any dating patterns? Like, what do you have? Like, things that why are you having more luck? I mean, what do you think it is? I can't picture.
I don't know. Like, I was wondering if like men are spooked by talking to women in person because they just assume you're on an app and they're on apps too.
Interesting.
That's like the only. That's like a guess I have that.
So have you tried to meet men on apps?
I haven't used any apps. I did a dating website in the fall for 6 months between Africa and Asia. So between 2015 and 2016. And I was just looking to get laid and I still found it really frustrating.
So you're not a dating app person. And I don't think you're alone in that at all. Especially, I think those dating apps are getting played out, from what I can tell. Not that I'm dating.
I might try Match in October. We'll see after Draw the Blue Line. I don't know.
Okay, Cupid.
Maybe. Yeah, maybe.
But
people misrepresent themselves, and it isn't necessarily because they're malicious. It's also because they're delusional. So they want to see. They like to think that they're intellectual, and then you talk to them, and it's like, "Well, when's the last time you read a book?"
So Have meeting men or dating ever been a problem for you?
The feast and famine is a term I use a lot. Sometimes like you're beating them off with a stick and then other times you're like, it would be really cool if I could cuddle with somebody. Somewhere. Anybody?
I'll give you a hug after this.
Hey, I'll take it. I'll take it.
But you also seem really busy. So.
It's not helping. I haven't been going out a lot.
Priority.
Because a big problem that I have too is if I go out, I'm with my friends and I'm just thinking about talking to my friends. Like I don't even necessarily.
You're not looking around.
I'm not. Yeah. Cause I'm just like, "Oh, what's going on with my friend? I haven't seen you in a while."
Well, you've been here for a year. So that's not very long, really.
No.
You're not worried about it.
I'm super worried about it.
You're super not worried.
I'm super worried about it.
You are?
Yeah.
Why?
Because. My biological clock started pounding like a drum
really
the minute I turned 25. Yeah. And then I don't believe in a speedy courtship, especially if procreation is part of that. I'm really looking for a partner. Like I want a ride or die dude who is down for whatever.
Mm-hmm. Do you have any idea what might be getting in your way at all? Or
I wonder
this is just like, Jesus, I'm afraid I'm going to sound insulting or something, but because you seem like an amazing catch to me.
Thanks.
This is what I wonder about. I wonder if you have so much going on in your life and that if men, when they meet you, you know, you're so effervescence and engaged in your life that they are afraid, like their instinct isn't like there's a hole for me to fill. Because even though men don't want a needy woman, they don't, or say they don't want to be needed, I think that they do need to feel. Like when you meet men, do you try to find, you know, connect with them emotionally and stuff like that? I mean, even in the dumbest way possible.
I think when men meet me, they probably think I'm full of shit.
What do you
know, when you're like, oh, hi, I moved to New York and I'm a writer. They're probably like, that's cute, sweetheart. Like, mm-hmm. Sure. Mm-hmm. That's kind of, especially with, I don't look like an artist necessarily per se, which I like.
Well, you don't have just, that like,
you know, I'm not edgy. I do not have an edgy appearance by any means.
You don't have that like, you know, that depressed vibe. Exactly. That angst ridden, depressed vibe. You're the opposite of that. But I think that's what's great. But okay, so this is what I was going to say, vulnerability. See, I think that you seem like a well-rounded person, but you don't present vulnerability. Do you know that?
I mean, you heard me talking about the failure that I'm anticipating.
No. I don't know.
I'm just wondering.
I'm just wondering.
Because these are the things that I'm wondering too. Like, I don't know.
I'm just trying to imagine. But I wonder, here, will you just experiment and report in on it?
Sure.
Me.
Yeah.
Okay.
I like homework.
So, okay. Yeah. Oh, now you.
Now I do. I was a good student in college. Everything.
Okay.
Yeah.
So this is what I'm curious to find out. Let's do this as an experiment. If the next time you get in, you know, keep your eye out, find a guy you think is cute, and then, you know, start a conversation, which is easy for you, which is like 90% of the battle, and then talk a little bit about your project, but right away, talk about how you're worried about that it's going to fail or the things that could go wrong. Talk right away. Explain the, you know, talk positively about the project, but then go right into what you're worried about.
Okay.
And see if that vulnerability works. I'm not saying that's going to be a good basis for
it. It would be interesting to see what the numbers are like, though.
But I'm guessing that maybe men see you as so happy and positive that they don't see the vulnerability and it's scary to them. And I'm just saying that, or it's threatening, you know, threatening, like this person's so happy and positive. I'm a wreck. I'm a disaster. She'll never like me. Everything's so great for her. And I suck. My life sucks. She doesn't want to have anything to do with me.
We have a minute left and I didn't even like mention that.
Keep that in mind.
I've been a bucket of anxiety the last few months.
I'm talking about your superficial presentation. That's all.
We'll see.
So we've got a minute left, and I just want to make sure that we mention Radio Free Brooklyn again, radiofreebrooklyn.org. This is Dr. Lisa Gives a Shit. Thanks for listening. And I want to make sure that we get the URL for your website, Draw the Blue Line.
Yep, www.drawtheblueline.com.
And I also want to make sure that you guys stick around and listen to Elon Zanziger's show, because it's fucking amazing. It's called Lost and Rewound, and it's based on Elon's carrying around a tape recorder in the mid-90s when he was in middle school. And it's like talk and music and all that stuff. And I got a soft spot in my heart for Elon. He knows that. You have to meet him sometime. Come to one of the radio station. We're actually having, I should just put this out there, the radio station, I organized a Radio Free Brooklyn. You should come to this host happy hour at the Footlight on Friday at 6:30 to 8:30. Elon, you should come meet this chick. Do you have a girlfriend, Elon? This girl's really happening.